You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
There he is.
Did you hear that?
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Out in the swamps, what you think I've seen? Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on his stylish knee, and he was talking to Moccasin Joe. Where the party gonna have? Out in the St. John's swamps. Sasquatch doing a brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Stomp.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Biscardi. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Biscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Well, hello, folks. It's that Wednesday night again, and here we are with Bigfoot Live radio show. Marco, what do we got going on for this evening?
Well, by golly, we got a bunch of stuff going on here. I think I got to find out who just dialed in. Is that Greg?
Yeah, you got this. This is Greg.
Okay, Greg. I just wanted to make sure that it was you. We got Greg on, so I'm going to go. Hey, you know, the first time here, we take a look at Bruce again. Bruce was here last week, and he gave us a rundown. He's got some updated information, so I'm going to put Bruce on, and you can
awesome.
Start out with Bruce. How's that, TJ?
That sounds great. Let's hear what's going on. Bruce, up in the Blackfeet Reservation in Montana. You there, buddy?
Yeah, I'm here, TJ. Remember,
boy,
you remember that little creek that I was telling you, it was Bigfoot Alley?
Yeah, yeah.
Where you took those pictures of the Beaver Dams and stuff?
Correct, yeah.
Well, down the road from there, past that little village, my buddy lives at the end of the valley down there. And where I was telling you that Bigfoot crossed the road,
Right.
He'd go up around that ranch house and the corrals and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, day before yesterday, my buddy that lives down there, he wanted me to call him yesterday, but I couldn't get a hold of him, so I went in and I talked to him, and he said day before yesterday, he couldn't get no sleep because that Bigfoot was down at a little grove of trees hollering, and so he had to go outside and shoot his gun in there a couple times. But it was making a hollering. Right down where he crosses the road there.
So the guy couldn't get any sleep and he decided to go out and shoot at it? Or what did you say?
He didn't shoot at it. He just aired it off so he could get some sleep. He just shot up in the air.
Okay. So what else has been going up there in Montana, Bruce?
Well, I heard another story from another guy that lives out at Birch Creek. He goes out and he hunts at night, and he leaves apples, out for the deer. And he goes out there and sits and waits. He said he's been getting scared off because he could hear some grunts, kind of a growly grunt, big grunt.
Mm-hmm.
So he said he's going to quit hunting deer for a little bit till Bigfoot leaves or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Bruce, I got an email today from a gentleman, I won't say his name yet, up in Montana there, near Looking Glass Road, near 49 past Kiowa. Is that what you're talking about?
No. This here is out at Birch Creek. It's, where that guy that was telling us he had some Bigfoot tracks down around by Hart Butte?
Yeah.
He said it's about halfway to the Hart Butte Road.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's about maybe 20 miles south of Browning.
Okay.
But he lives up along the creek there, and that's where he heard those grunts. And he heard bear and lions, and he knows.
Wow.
The animals,
Action going on, obviously.
He couldn't describe it. He heard it holler, but he said when he was setting out there, that thing kept making a grunty noise, like he's breathing through his nose or something,
Yeah.
Well, he said he's going to quit hunting that night for a few days, so thing will leave.
Well, maybe he doesn't need to be hunting with a gun. Maybe he should get a camera and get out there and get some pictures of Bigfoot.
That's what I told him. I said you should get a big million candlelight flashlight and hit him with it and take his picture,
Yeah.
Said he's going to get a big flashlight, so I don't know. Just have to wait and see.
Well, maybe you can take him your ears over and show it to him.
Oh, yeah. Mine won't charge, so I don't know what's the matter with that.
Well, awesome. I appreciate you coming on, Bruce, and, mute yourself out, listen to the rest of the show. I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
Okay.
You're welcome anytime.
All right.
Thank you very much. Now, folks, we were supposed to have Kevin and Amber and Robin back on from last week, if you guys remember from that story. They have the farm in Pennsylvania where they sent us pictures of the footprints or the foot tracks in the ground and the tree breaks. Well, we've been conversing all week long, and, you know, we told him how to bake the area and so forth and so on. And I get this email from Kevin's daughter, Amber, and it basically starts off by saying, you know, we've got some great news for you guys, good possible news, that last night their landlord, Stallion, which is a huge draft horse, got over the fence last night and to be with the other mares and was fighting with the gelding. And the stallion went into the woods to go hide, and they couldn't find the horse, so they had to go out and look for it. Well, her dad and a friend of his went looking for the horse in the woods without a flashlight, which made things harder to see him because he's a black horse, and they saw something tall and big standing by the bushes. Amber, I guess, walked over towards it thinking the horse and screamed. Oh, and then it screamed on the other side of the pond saying that they found him, dad. She was confused because they found the horse over by the pond. It couldn't have been the horse she was looking at, and I wish they were here to tell the story tonight. But obviously something happened, which is okay. But they've got pictures of some more tracks and some more tree breaks, and they sent them a picture of the area where the creature was seen. So hopefully maybe we'll get them on next week again to finish that story. But I also know we've got Eric, our good buddy Eric from North Carolina, and he's going to give us some updates on what's going on up there. Eric, how you doing?
Hey, doing pretty good, TJ. How you doing?
You know, if I didn't do any better, I'd be shooting myself in the foot and then going seeing the doctor.
Yeah, I heard that.
Give everybody a little bit of quick background on you, Eric. It's been a while since you've been on the show, and then we'll go into what's going on.
Well, I'm a law enforcement officer. I've been intrigued with Bigfoot ever since I was 8 years old. Really boost my interest in the Bigfoot is people like Mike Green and Tom Biscardi. I read Mike Green's book, and I finally met Mike Green in the Uwari Forest, which that was, you know, the highlight of searching for Bigfoot for me. And to meet the man himself, because when you read his book, you can't put his book down.
I agree.
And I considered Mike Green and Tom Biscardi Sr., as well as yourself, being like mentors to me in this situation with looking for Bigfoot. So I started going down the Uwari Forest, started looking around, and I started trying to map out locations that I had found that people were having type of incidents with these type of creatures and the situation that the people were put in when these creatures appeared, whether it was daytime or nighttime. And so what I did was when I finally met with Mike Green, you know, Mike told me a lot of things that I needed to do and things that you might want to consider when searching for these creatures and things that you might want to consider that might not happen. So don't let it disencourage you when you're looking for these creatures. So what I did was I started venturing to Uwari Forest. I started looking for signs that I seen in Mike's book and things I had seen on Tom Biscardi's website. I started taking pictures of tree breaks. And the more and more I searched, I found footprints. A couple of times I had some recordings during the daytime when I was just taking pictures of geographical areas where these creatures could possibly be. I got some growls, and I got a few other things that happened, some tree knocks and things of that nature. So as I tried to canvas all of Uwari Forest, I started finding footprints that I could cast, the ones that I could cast. And it was very interesting with the things that I was seeing. Each time I would always call back, email Mike or Tom Sr. with all the evidence that I found, and they always encouraged me that any time that someone called you with something interesting, if they knew that you were avidly searching for this creature in the Uwari Forest, to always jump on lead. So I can wholeheartedly say, without actually seeing one of these creatures firsthand, which that will be the highlight of my life when I do see one of these creatures, with the evidence that I've seen, what I know from forensics and being in law enforcement, and just using this as a hobby, I know these creatures exist. So no one in all of this thing that we call Earth can tell me that these creatures don't exist. I know they do.
Well said. Very well said. Do you remember the first time we met and talked?
Yes, sir.
Online?
Yes, sir. Okay. Yes, sir.
I was talking today about the video that you sent me, and you wanted me to, you know, slow it down and send it off to our low lab and have the guys check it out. And, folks, I want to say it was probably over a year ago, and you were on a trail up in Uwari. And
yes, sir.
You were filming near a ridge line because, let me see, I'm trying to remember. To the left, when you were filming, something went by your camera up there between the trees. And to this day, we still haven't slowed it down enough, but we do know that it was 7.5 foot tall. Okay?
Yes, sir.
And
yes, sir.
That video, I always think about that video, and every now and then I go back to thinking, you know, how can we get it enhanced any better, which we can't. But
yes, sir.
You know, big black shadow, you know.
Right.
Cast. And our relationship started from there, you know. And it was, was it January, February when we met?
It was just after the time that I met with Mike Green. And what it was, I walked to the ridge. Mr. Green had told me the areas where he had filmed, where he actually did the infrared video. And we talked for like an hour. And he gave me some techniques and things that I need to do. So what I did was, it was like a very cool, not hot at all, day in the afternoon. And so I went to the ridge line. And with all the information that I received from Mr. Green and my research on the area of the gentleman that actually cut these trails inside the Uwari Forest, I tried to map out an area that would be good to do some research. So what happened was, make a long story short, I walked the ridge line on the Uwari Forest on the mountain area. And as I walked on the ridge line, not too far where Mike Green filmed this infrared video, I seen some tree breaks. So the thing was that I wanted to take pictures to actually try to see if I can make some kind of scientific or some kind of sense out of this. We're looking at the tree breaks. Was it something that was natural due to maybe storms or things of that nature? Did a creature actually do this? So what happened was, when I got to the top of the ridge line, it's when I heard the growl. I stopped right on the ridge line. I pulled out my gun that I had with me. I put it close to my waistline because I didn't know if this was a bear or a dog. The growl didn't sound like either a bear or a dog. And I stopped, and it wasn't until I got home, my wife and I looked at the video. My wife is good with computers and things of that nature. So when she pulled up the actual video right before I called UTJ, she mm-hmm. said, "What's that going in the background?" And that was the shadow that I've seen, and I couldn't explain it. I don't know what it was, but all I know is if anyone ever watches the video, you can see in the video while I'm panning around and looking at the actual tree break, I stop as soon as I hear the growl. And you can hear the faint growl in the background. It just startled me to the point that I grabbed my weapon, put it to my waistline, and I stopped and looked around. And that's when the shadow comes around. So at that time, I said to myself, I said, I can't believe it. It can't be. Maybe it's just the sun passing over or an eagle or a buzzard or something flying over. But that's when I immediately sent it. Try to send a video to Tom Senior and to UTJ, and I tried to enhance it to where I can send it to Mr. Green.
I guess we got Bigfoot barking in the background. Sorry about that, Eric.
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry about that.
No, you're okay.
Go ahead and finish.
Well, what I did was I really wanted to be on the expedition when you guys went cross country, but I ended up getting pneumonia at the time. But I've been back to the Uwari Forest during the daytime. I've walked around, and what I'm trying to do, I'm trying to trying to make sure that it's going to be tolerable for me to go back when the heat is not so bad. So what I'm trying to do is wait when it's good, like maybe a cool time of the year, maybe September, and I'm trying to do a night expedition and try to go in some areas where some hot spots. A lot of the hot spots around Baton Lake, Inuwari Forest, and around Westmoress Mountain. That's a lot of the hot spots. So what I'm trying to do is, like I said, I'm trying to pick a good time that I want to go up there. I want to try to set up some cameras and some techniques that Mr. Green showed me that you can use with simple technology. It's a fishing line. And so I'm gonna try to use that. I went online, Mr. Green, to eBay, and I'm trying to order some simple things. One of the things I want to do, I want to try to get a bionic ear to try to hear some of the sounds that a lot of the campers have said they have heard that came out of Uwari Forest. But the biggest thing that fascinated me, and I tell people, is the footprints. I've never seen anything like it. I don't know how many people's listening tonight, but I can only tell you that when you cast a footprint and when you take the techniques of people who know what they're doing, such as TJ, Tom Sr., Mike Green, and whoever else is out there that we consider that are experts, and you take the techniques that they tell you, and you go out, it might be some days you might not even see anything. Oh, well, it's like fishing. It might be the day you might not even catch that big bass or that big catfish. Oh, well, you got to try again. But whenever you go and you finally see that footprint, I'm telling you, it's going to be something like I can't explain it. I really can't. I mean, it's no way to explain it, man.
The way I explained it to people was it would be like finding out Santa Claus was real. You know?
Exactly right. I mean, when you actually use the techniques that you guys tell people to do and you actually go out and it's a situation where you take reference points on tree lines and you look at footprints and you start looking at the contour of the footprints and you start measuring your foot. If you have a big foot, you measure it against the foot that you cast and you start seeing these footprints, I'm telling you, it's nothing. I mean, I can't explain it. I really can't. I mean, it's something, and I know if I can't explain this, the day that I actually see one of these creatures or the day that I actually film a portion of these creatures, it's going to be something extraordinary. I can tell you that now.
I agree 100% with you. You know, you brought up something about heat and waiting until it got a little cooler. Mike Green, you still out there with us?
I got to unmute him.
Hey, Eric, how you doing?
Hey, Mr. Green, how you doing, sir?
Just fine, thank you. Good to hear your voice. Thank you for all those kind words.
Oh, hey, man, I'm telling the truth. When the truth is there, tell it.
Well, thank you again.
Absolutely. You know, Eric brought up the heat and, you know, how when you're out there moving through the woods, you know, it's right now it's too hot to do it. And I figured, you know, somebody knows about the heat because when we were in Paris, Texas, I think you wanted to – you called it the Baton Death March or something like that?
The what was it? What was it called? Lake Wade? Lake Macy? Lake Macy Death March. Yeah. That was horrible.
Well, you know, a lot of people looking for Bigfoot's glamorous life. There's more downtime and seeing nothing than there is of, you know, seeing any evidence of the creature.
That's for sure. It's a patient man's sport, I guess. In a lot of ways, it's been the most boring time of my life for years and years and years. As Eric said, where nothing happens, but you're always waiting for that moment, and once in a while, you get lucky, and then you want more, and sometimes you wait years for that next little bit. And it never stops. It just never. It's an addiction. It's an addiction. That's the best way to put it.
Absolutely. You know, would you say you're addicted there, Eric?
Yes, sir. I can tell you now from when I started this venture, when I met Mike Green, when I met Tom Sr., when I met you, TJ. I'm gonna tell you now. Majority of my time, when I'm off from work and I'm close to retirement, I can tell you now, a lot of people say, hey, when I retire, I'm going to deplete the streams with trout. I can tell you now, a lot of my time is going to be spent, you know, out looking for these creatures. I can tell you that now.
So
it's addictive. I can tell you that now, because once you get any ounce of evidence whatsoever, and you take it to the experts like yourself, or even if you get a chance to email Mike, and they look at the evidence, and you start talking to outside sources, you know, it's almost comparing sources together. If people are saying the same thing, then it's got to be a yes. So when you start doing that, I'm telling you, I mean, it's addictive, man. It's like gambling, man. I mean, but this is a good type of gambling. I mean, you're trying to find something that the world says doesn't exist, but you want a group of people that says it does. So it's addictive.
It certainly is, you know. And I got bit by the bug back in 2006, and I'm sure everybody has their own story about how they got bit. But, you know, people, and I've heard people say it a couple times, and I just want to clarify. I don't consider myself a Bigfoot expert. I thank you for saying so, though. I'm an expert at looking for the sign of the creature. I don't know if there is a Bigfoot expert, because no Bigfoot's been caught and, you know, examined and dissected. So when you say expert, I appreciate it. That's awesome. I'm more of an expert at looking for the creature.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you there. When people say that they're experts, I kind of cringe in this, because you're right. They don't. There's nothing really, really, really solid like a body to measure up against. So people are experts in conjecture, and yeah, some experience, like the things that we've done over the years. But you're right. I wouldn't consider myself an expert, and I wouldn't consider anybody an expert. We're all students, and we're all learning, and hopefully one of us will graduate.
Well, I know one thing, TJ, that I know Mr. Green, and I know that Tom Sr. did tell me when I started conversing with you guys in the past 2 years that your main focus is, if you actually want to capture actual evidence, go in this as a person who is an expert to debunk what you see to find out the true story. Now, if you go in to debunk what you see and you go in and taking that avenue and you finally see what you see, you will be more of a credible witness to people to say, hey, just like what it says at the beginning of this show, what you said in your phrase, I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot, but I know what I've seen.
Yep, yep. You know, Green has the greatest saying. When it comes to the Bigfoot world, when in doubt, throw it out.
There you go.
Right, I ought to sell T-shirts with that.
Hey, we should get some printed. I'm telling you, put them on the website. Eric, I want to thank you for coming on.
Yes, sir.
Please listen to the show if you like. We're going to go to a commercial break here. And, Marco, we're going to come back with who?
Yeah, we're going to come back, TJ, with?
Who do we have next?
Well, we got three people. We got Kevin, Robin, and Amber Morgan.
Oh, they made it.
We also have Greg Worthington, and we have Chuck Krill.
Okay, good. The commercial, we'll pick up with Kevin and them.
Okay. Here we go.
Awesome.
Talk to you soon, Eric.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
There he is.
Did you hear that?
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out the tree line. He's moving to the right. see him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things, if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot. I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
And we're back.
All righty. You know, folks, I kind of teased you a little bit with what was going on at the Kevin's, Amber's, and Robin's place, but they're on the show now, and we're going to go ahead and bring in the trio up in Pennsylvania.
Hello, everybody. How are you?
Hey, Kevin. Glad you made it.
I'm sorry I was a little late getting in. Our next-door neighbor has a draft horse stallion that came to visit our horses, and we were trying to catch the horse, and he did hurt me, but that's
good.
Fun part of horses.
Well, yeah, me and Amber have been conversing through email this week, and she had some really good news for me. And I was kind of sharing it a little bit in the beginning. If you want to go ahead and share that with our audience, please, or you can let Amber, do it, whoever wants to talk.
Yeah, I'll let Amber talk, because she's the one that started to feel like she saw something and heard things.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Amber.
How are you guys doing?
Doing really well.
Did you guys be able to see the picture okay? Did you guys see the picture?
Yeah. Why don't you go ahead and explain a little better than I was doing about what happened, what you went out to do, and what you think you saw?
It was during the middle of the night, and you guys want to hear the sounds I heard or what happened when I saw the dark creature? Or
yeah, tell us.
Okay. I know the one sound that I heard was outside my back window around 2 o'clock in the morning, and I have my radio on, and it's down low, and I can hear it over my radio, and it was not a high pitch, but it was a low pitch, long, deep howl, and I know we've been getting a lot of rain a lot, but the stallion outside, that was what, yesterday? Yesterday, today happened again. The stallion got out and went into our field and went after our mares and started attacking our gelding. So he took off and went hiding in the woods. And Dad went to go with my mom to put him in the barn while me and my dad's friend went out to go look for Raven. We didn't have a flashlight, so we're in the dark trying to find him. And when me and Bob were out in the field, we kept hearing, something moving around. And I heard almost, like a type of whistle, but it was, I don't know if it could have been Dad whistling. And Dad's friend said, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, you're going, keep going.
Okay. But I know Dad's friend said that he saw a dark shadow of a figure, and I know when it's dark and you have no flashlight, I know your mind can play tricks on you and stuff like that, but the picture that I sent you was exactly right where it was standing, and I thought it was Raven because he had a halter on, and so I was walking up where the fence line was, and I couldn't find anything, so I went out where Dad's friend was, and when I came back around, I saw this big, tall-like figure standing right where those trees were, and it was standing upright, and, like, it was just standing there. And so I thought it was our gelding, and I started mm-hmm. coming towards it, and I'm like, come here, boy. I'm like, come here, Raven. And it just, so I got, like, to me, with the darkness in my eyes, it looked like it started to walk towards me. But I just mm-hmm. got this very, very, like, creepy, uneasy feeling, and I just went the other way. And
now, at this point, you still think it's just the horse, correct?
It was not the horse. It was the landlord's son that helped us. His father came out tonight and got the same stallion. He went out with the flashlight and found him on the other opposite side of the pond. And while we were, sorry, I have a bad cold. The figure was definitely not where the horse was at all. It was not him. When I went to walk away in the day, to away from the thing, the dark figure that I saw, they already mm-hmm. found him. So he was nowhere near where I was. He was on the other side in the corner.
So when you heard them yell that they found the horse, did you start to get scared? Did you wonder what was going on when you were looking at
him? I definitely, because I seriously thought I found him. Because the horse that we have is going, he's black. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Bob, I was like, I found him. He's over here. Because the other horses were on the other side, way over on the other. They have different sections of fields, and they have barbed wire fence. And they were on the other side. So I knew that it wasn't the horses on this other side of the fence. And I walked towards him, and Bob started to come up toward me because I thought I found him. And when I started to come up to him, I was, like, waiting to hear the halter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and to make a noise. And it was standing right where those thin trees were. And it was standing, like, it was a little higher, taller than the horse. And it was, like, you can't really, because I didn't have a flashlight. And mm-hmm. I didn't have the camera, so it didn't really help much. But it was just a big, giant something. And it was standing there, and when I got this creepy, uneasy, scared feeling, I just took off running, and I'm like, yeah, that's definitely not Graven. And when they said that they found him, he was on the other side of the opposite side of the fence, so I knew it was definitely not Mark Elvey.
I'm looking at the picture, and obviously, I mean, the trees are thinned out enough to where you'd actually see something if there was, something standing between these trees. There's not that many of them, and they're pretty much separated to where if a human or somebody was standing in there, you'd actually be able to see the outline of a horse or a creature or whatever. So
yeah.
When you went back during the day to take the picture, did you go over by the trees and see if there's any tracks there? Because I remember you saying you found some tracks.
When I went over there, I did not see anything. They have, like, a lot of brush and, thistles and stuff like that, and there's not a lot of mud over in that area. So I didn't see anything. But I did take the picture for you so that way you guys can see exactly where it was standing, where I saw.
Was there a movement that day, Amber?
I'm not trying to interrupt the conversation, but okay. Amber and I had gone for a walk a day or two earlier mm-hmm. trying to see any kind of footprints. We thought we saw a possibility of a print, but we didn't have a camera at the time. And it looked like as it stepped in the mud, it slid a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And we looked on the other side of the fence, and it looked kind of like there might have been a print on the opposite side, like it jumped over the fence or something. But we didn't have anything to get photos of it at the time. There was a print that looked like on both sides of the fence.
Okay, and that's the barbed wire fence over there?
the very top line is barbed wire. All the rest of the fence is like 4-inch squared mesh. Because we try to make sure the horses stay where they're supposed to. Of course, when you get stallions sure. involved around mares, sometimes they don't like to do that. The way the prints were, it was kind of like something either jumped over the fence or just stepped over it. That's kind of what it looked like.
Well, I'd love for you to go out tomorrow and check that fence line again and check the barbed wire area where you think it's stepped over. It might have left a tuft of hair or something on the fence.
Okay. I'll try to check it out and see.
You know? Now, I know you. I told you how to bait the area. Have you done that?
Yes, we have. We have not seen so far any activity around them.
Okay. Okay.
Not at this time, anyways.
Right.
And I know they don't always, I would think, not go in the exact same places all the time. My daughter and I are planning on going into other areas and putting some more around.
Okay. Outstanding, you know, outstanding. I mean, it's exciting when I'm getting emails, you know, during the week and people that I've talked to that are actually having something going on while they're, you know, while we talked about it, which is just phenomenal. I'm hoping that you and your wife and your daughter are going to get, you know, a picture of a creature or maybe one of them, hopefully. We'd get on
that
the car
would be, that would be wonderful. The only other thing I can think of, when we last talked, you had mentioned about when it gets dark to try a tree knock or two. My wife is standing on the porch. I have some trouble with my hearing, but my wife said that when I did a tree knock, she felt that she heard a response to it. I haven't got good hearing, so I couldn't hear it. But my wife said that she did.
Well, what time was that?
Pardon?
Well, what time of night was that?
About 11 or so at night.
Oh, okay. So right around the right time. Now, you know, what you might want to try to do is you'll tree knock a little bit with, like, you know, sequences of 2, 3, 1, and you wait a good minute in between them. And if there's something out there, they're going to respond back to you. As long as they know that, you know, it's probably one of them actually tree knocking back towards you.
Now, when you do the tree knocks, do you just do, like, one knock, or do you do a couple? How should the tree knocks be done?
I alternate. It'll be tap, 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 and I'll wait for, you know, like I said, a minute, and then maybe if I don't hear nothing, I'll tap it twice or,
okay.
you know, in a rapid motion. You know, but you want that echo to travel on so it can actually hear. You know, and that's what you're looking for to come back. You don't want to, you know, like it coming back from an echo from a canyon or a valley. But you'll know what you if you did 3 and it comes back 2, there's no echo. You understand? And nobody knows what they're saying. You know,
right.
you know they train off with some kind of communication. Who knows what it is?
Right.
But, you know. I can't wait to get some more pictures from you guys and to listen to more stuff that's happening up there. It's awesome having a place where things that are happening as we're speaking. Because usually it dies down. There's a kind of habitation going on by you, you know, because you're not harming the creature. You're not trying to scare them off, and maybe they're just hanging around there.
Okay. I know there's a lot of food in the area. I don't really know for sure what they would eat. You hear so many stories about what they could eat. I've heard people say, oh, well, they carried off a dog or something, or they eat fish, or they eat strictly vegetarian. It's just hard.
Well, like we were talking earlier,
tons of berries.
And I think they eat whatever they want to eat, whenever they can find. They're opportunists, you know.
Right, kind of like people.
Yeah, you know, they're going to eat what they can eat, what's there. You know, I mean, I got berries, or do I have to chase a deer? You know what I mean?
Right.
It's just a theory. But hey, I want to thank you and your wife and your daughter for coming back on the show. Please keep the emails coming, and hopefully by next week we got something else happening. We can get you guys back on the show. Something more's going on.
Okay, thank you very much for allowing us to be able to visit.
Hey, anytime, my friend, anytime. Thank you very much. Hey, Marco, I think we can go to Greg next, our buddy in Alabama.
You got it. Hey, Greg, you're on.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Hey, Mr. Worthington, how the heck are you, buddy?
And I'm in Georgia. I'm not in Alabama.
I corrected myself and said Georgia. You know? So when Marco told me that you were coming on the show, I said, oh, that's good. We haven't heard from Greg in a long time, so there must be something going on. Why don't you tell us?
Well, I figured when he called me, he couldn't find anybody to talk. So I figured I'd come on and be a filler for him.
There you go. You know, you went and saw somebody for us down in Alabama. Why don't you go ahead and tell them about what happened there?
Yeah, well, our buddy Chuck Creel called me. I haven't been on, you know.
Chuck is on right
almost,
now, too.
Yeah, I've been gone for almost, I haven't been in the woods doing anything for almost 6 years. And then Chuck Creel called me up, and he said, Greg, Tom just called me and said something's going on in North Alabama. Wants to know if we can go check it out. And it worked out where it was just me going up there. And I said, yeah, I'll go up there. But I said, I want to talk to him first before I go. I said, that's a four-hour drive. I said, I want to go up there and something's really going on. You know, so I talked to the guy twice on the phone and talked to him over the phone. You know, I about had him wrote off as, you know, not being real. You know, mm-hmm. I thought, how can someone, all the times I've been out there, I can't have any encounters, and this guy's having all kind of stuff happening to him. You know, I said, you know, this can't be real. So I didn't want to go up there.
Right.
And so it just so happened that I had some business I had to go take care of right in that same area. And I looked at the calendar and told them what day I would be there. And I said, I can come see you. I said, how far is this from where you're at? He said, 2 miles. I said, okay, well, I'm only going to be 2 miles from you. I said, that's be great. I said, all right, this is the date. I'll be there, and we'll look around. And so I'm not going to be out of my way. I'll go over and visit with him. So I get there, and I drive up to his house and meet him for the first time, and his dad was riding around doing some work on the golf cart and stuff back and forth, and then his dad got in the car to leave, and when he was getting in the car to leave, he hollered over. I didn't even meet his dad. I just waved at him, and I asked him. I said, "How's your dad feel about what's going on around here?" And he told me. He said, "Well, he thinks we're nuts. He don't believe it." Okay. So, anyway, before his dad got in the car to leave, he yelled over at Josh. He said, Josh, he said, did y'all get all them peaches off that tree down there? He said, it was full of peaches the other day. He said, now there's not a single peach on it. He said, Josh said, no, I thought you got them all. I said, no, I didn't touch them. And his dad got in the car and drove off. And I told Josh, I said, I think I know where your peaches may have went. So right there, my interest spiked, you know.
Right.
It spiked right there. These people had all kind of fruit trees around their house, apple trees, peach trees, pear trees, strawberry vines, you know. And my interest spiked right there. So maybe there might be something to this. So then he gets in the we get in the car and he takes me about 5 miles away down the road where he's been doing a little experiment out in the woods. Him and his cousin out in the woods and thought something might be going on. And it's very woody, lots of woods, hills. And he takes me back about an eighth of a mile back in off the road to a real high cliff. And he told me him and his cousin had been doing a little experiment. They had left some food out there. Apples,
right.
Stuff like that, you know, and they come back and they'd be gone. And I said, well, shoot, anything could have got that. He said, we need to leave something that's got a lid on it and leave it and see what happens. So they got a mason jar, put a pickle in it, screwed the lid on the mason jar, left out there on top of this cliff. And that's where he was taking me to show me. But he was telling me this story while we was driving the road. He said, when we come back a few days later, he said, in that mason jar, the lid was off of it. The jar was upside down, and the pickle was gone. And so he was telling that story when we was driving over there. We walked out there. We was walked about an eighth of a mile into the woods where he left his jar. And I'm going to tell you, he honestly did look surprised when we got there because he looked over and said, my jar's gone. I said, where'd you leave it? He said, right over where that rock is at. And I said, right where that rock is at? Right on the edge of that cliff. And went over there, and there's a flat rock about 6 inches square. It was a nice-shaped rock. It was about 6 inches square, about 2 inches thick. And it was it was flat on both sides. And it was laying right there where he left his, where the jar was at. I said, well, it looks like to me he made a trade with you. He wanted that jar, and he left you a gift.
Oh, he left the rock. Okay.
Yeah, he left the rock. He said, that's where my jar was, right where the rock was at. You know, And I said, well, look, like he wanted that rock. He left you a little gift because he wanted your jar, you know. So I was just kind of, you know, joking with him, you know. I don't know if that's really what happened. But anyway, then he started telling me, he took me over to, we went to the woods a little piece further, and he started telling me this other story. He said, Greg, I've also been leaving these marbles. He said, I have these, you know, these kids' marbles. Well, I left some marbles up here. He said, I just kind of left them in a little pile right here, some marbles. He said, a few days later, I come back, and he's real nice, smooth rocks all around my marbles. He said, my marbles are still there, but there's these round, smooth rocks. He took me over there, you know, and he showed me, and got over there and showed me right where they're at, and he showed me the rocks that was left there. He said, they weren't there when he left the marbles before. He said, now these nice, smooth, round rocks are there. They're little, like they were almost homemade or something. I don't know, but they were almost like a marble itself. It's a rock.
Wow.
And he said one time he come back to check on that spot, he said all of his marbles was gone. Just them little rocks was there. He said, and then he come
what
back
the
a few days later.
Take those marbles.
He come back a few days later, and the marbles were back. You know? So anyway.
For you.
Huh? Did what?
Mike, the question.
Who has a question?
Mike, did you have a question?
That was Chuck.
But anyway, we started walking out of the woods, and he also sent me a picture where a few days, just a few couple weeks earlier, he was in that same spot. He said one of them creatures threw a stick at him and hit him right in the elbow, and he sent me a picture of his elbow bleeding, you know. So anyway, we went walking out of the woods, walking out of the car, you know, and all this is sounding pretty interesting, you know, but nothing really that I could call you and Tom to come look at, you know. It's just good stories, you know.
Sure.
You know, nothing I could say that this there's something here doing this. But anyway, we drive back to his house. And he had one other thing he wouldn't show me. We got on a golf cart and drove in the woods behind his house and went way back to the woods on his golf cart. And the golf cart was giving us trouble. It kept flooding out on us. We'd have to let it sit for a few minutes before it cranked back up. And we got to one point way back in the woods. And it wasn't thick woods now. This had been timbered, and it was just thinned out. There was some woods there, but it wasn't thick. They'd been thinned out. And there was some heavy brush and stuff back there. But we get back way back in the back, this property, and the golf cart quit running. We had just let it sit for a few minutes. We got out of the golf cart. Now, it was myself, Josh, and his little boy. His little boy was about 5 or 6 years old. Cute little boy. And we just got out of the golf cart and started walking down this logging road we was on. And we got a little piece from the golf cart. And Josh is walking up to my right. And the little boy's walking behind us. And I heard something off to my right. Now, I didn't want to lead him on or nothing.
Right.
I wanted to know if he heard what I heard. I just looked over him. I said, did you hear that? He looked at me and said, you talking about that growl? I said, you heard it, didn't you? He said, yeah, it came from over there. He pointed in the same direction I heard it from. And what it sounded like, TJ, was a nostril type of a growl, like a heavy snore or something. You know?
Okay. Yeah.
And that's the best way I can describe it. A nostril growl like somebody snoring, just real short, you know, I heard it. And, man, I walked over to where I heard this from, and I wanted whatever was in there, I wanted to flush it out so bad. This is daytime, and
right.
If I could flush it out, I would see what made this noise. But I got to think, you know, trying to think out the situation real quickly. What do I need to do? We ain't got no weapon. We don't have a weapon on us. Then we got this little boy with us. So I just, you know, I thought the best thing to do at the time was just leave it alone.
There you
know?
Go.
We're way out in the woods with no weapon, with a little boy with us.
Yeah.
So, anyway, we got back in the golf cart and we got it back going. And you know, I'm thinking now, you know, everything this guy has shown me, maybe it's real. You know, the peach tree, all the peaches are gone. Then I heard this growl. I'm thinking, you know, this. You know, there may be something going on. That's when I called you and Tom and said, y'all need to come see this guy. Y'all, you might want to come see him. And,
it's a plausible situation. The creature might be there.
Yeah. Before we left to go out there in the woods, I talked to his wife.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to Josh's wife, and I said, do you know anything about what's going on right here? What Josh is describing to me and stuff? She said, I've seen him. I said, you've seen this creature? She said, yeah. I said, why not? She said, we were sitting one night on our front porch. She said, and it was dark. We had the front porch light off. We were just sitting on the porch, enjoying the evening. She said, he went walking right through our yard right there. She said, I could see this shadow, the silhouette walking through the yard. She said, and I was going to get up and go inside. And Josh, she said, Josh wouldn't let me go inside. He made me sit still.
Wow.
But she says that there's a night, and they wouldn't show me around the back of the house. There's a nightlight behind in the backyard. And she said she's seen him walk many times by her bedroom window in the backyard back there. Well, right, she's seen a silhouette go by the window. She said she just keeps the windows closed now.
You know, I got to wonder.
I mean, she keeps the shades closed all the time now, so she don't have to see him.
Well, you know, we're getting near the end of the show, but I kind of wonder, if with all this sightings and everybody seeing them, how come they haven't got any pictures, number one? You know, and did you look over the cliff and see if the jar was on the bottom of the cliff? It maybe fell off?
Yeah, we looked over. I couldn't see it, you know. I couldn't see no. We tried to find it. I looked for the sign of the jar, you know, or the cap or something, and I didn't see nothing. That's why, you know, at that point, all that was just stored. I couldn't make you guys go and look at this between the marbles and the jar and stuff. That wasn't good enough evidence for me to send you guys all the way out there to look at this stuff. But when I heard that growl, I called you guys and said, yeah, I might want to check this out. I heard a growl.
Okay. Hey, Greg, I want to say thanks for coming on the show again and sharing the investigation you did for us. I really appreciate it. I'd like to thank our other guests, Kevin, Amber, and Robin. Also, we want to shoot out over the Bruce down there in Montana. I want to say thank you over there, too. But, folks, it's the end of that show. And, see us next week when we can hopefully pick up on what's happened with the expedition. But when you're having fun, time flies. So, Bigfoot World, I'm out of here.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests. commend the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pack that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they died. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monsters, myths, and mysteries, legend, tales, and facts. We brought them together.